Hello, and welcome back to Hanging Out with the Dream King, a Neil Gaiman podcast by Clay Temple Media. I'm Glenn McDorman.
And I'm Brent Helt. In this episode, we'll be discussing Tuesday at the Beach, written by Neil Gaiman, with art by Adam Rex, published in 2015.
This is the third and final installment in our series on the anthropomorphic panda Chu. And of course, it is final because this is all the books that there are, Neil Gaiman. And Adam Rex only did three of these books. As has been the case for the previous two books, Tuesday at the Beach is available as both a board book and a picture book. We read the picture book. This book is the story of Chu spending the day at the beach with his parents, and naturally there is some sneezing. The story here is that Chu sneezes, and when he does, he splits the ocean in half, very much like Moses parting the Red Sea, I guess. Now, we don't really see how far out this extends, but it seems like it is a pretty big deal, and in fact, everyone else at the beach is rather distressed by this, and they want Chu to fix it. And without explanation, we are given to understand that all Chu has to do is sneeze again, and then the ocean will return to its normal configuration. But Chu cannot make himself sneeze. Several people offer advice about how to get himself to sneeze. None of it works until finally Chu's classmate, who we met in Chu's first day at school, this is the snail named Tiny, tells Chu about looking at the sun. And that does the trick. Chu sneezes, the ocean reverts to its normal state, everyone is happy, and then the story ends back home with Chu telling his parents that he had a great time at the beach and wishing them good night. So, all right, Brent, let's get into discussing Tuesday at the Beach. This book is a little different than some of the others, but I think let's save that conversation for a little bit later in the episode. And let's just ease in here by talking about, you know, what's going on in the background of the story. I mean, as we have said in the previous episodes, that so much of the joy of these stories are the world as it is fleshed out in the art. In this book, in this story, we don't move locations a lot, certainly not the way that we did in Chu's day, but we do have a lot of characters. There are a lot of anthropomorphic animals hanging out at the beach and living in the ocean. And so I guess for me, Brent, the question I have for you first is just, which was your favorite character here in the story? And I guess really, you know, not Chu or his parents, but, you know, favorite kind of background character in this story.
I think my favorite character in the story, I mean, the mare pandas were very tempting, but I went with the ice cream seller, who is an octopus. She appears several times throughout, particularly at the front. At the top of the story, she gives Chu an extra scoop of ice cream on his cone, and she tries to help Chu sneeze again and work him through things as kind of the story progresses. Specifically, she gives him a fizzy drink with bubbles to go up his nose in an attempt to try to get that to make him sneeze, which doesn't work. But she's kind of a fun, expressive character throughout. I really enjoy the way that she's depicted with her kind of pink bow tie and large pink rimmed glasses. It's just a lot of fun and a lot of expressiveness from that character. But there were a lot to choose from. So who did you like?
Yeah, well, I've got to comment on the ice cream server here, because ice cream is actually a pretty big feature of this story. And I will say that Finch was pretty distressed by Chu dropping his ice cream when he sneezes. I mean, Finch just said, hold on, we've got to stop reading, because what I need to know is Chu going to be able to eat that ice cream, or at least get some more ice cream? And of course, he does get more ice cream at the end. So that really was the arc of the story that Finch needed resolved. So I think his answer also might be the octopus who gives out the ice cream. But for me, it was the Arctic fox with pink sunglasses. We see this character in the first beach image, but then we also see her in the picture after Chu's second sneeze, right when the ocean has been put back. And what we see is that she's been blown out to the ocean, but is standing on the head of a whale, which, I don't know, Arctic fox in sunglasses standing on the head of a whale is not, you know, it wasn't an image I was going to request to see, but it was absolutely delightful once I encountered it.
The trauma of the loss of the ice cream cone is really nicely depicted here, in that as he begins to sneeze, first one scoop falls off, then the other scoop falls off. And finally, when he does sneeze, the cone goes flying, which I really did appreciate that. So that was a fun thing for Finch to pick up on, too.
Yeah, I think that was all happening in slow motion for him. Like, I think he was just screaming, you know, no, very slowly as we were turning the pages here. And yeah, you know, that's what it is to be a kid, I guess, as well. Well, all right, let's talk about what makes this book different from the previous two Chu books. Well, there are maybe several things that are different, but let's talk about narrative first, which is that this book is, at least to my mind, Brent, the only one of these that features an obstacle to be overcome, right? That people get upset about Chu's sneezing. His sneezing actually causes some kind of problem that then has to be put right. Yeah, this is new to the series here. How did you feel about that?
I mean, I felt fine about it. I did... for half a millisecond wonder if there was going to be a logic as to which direction he needed to face to do the second sneeze to fix things, because I was just a little confused why the first sneeze did things and why the water would stay, the Red Sea would stay parted the way that it did. But, you know, then I decided to let it go because it's a children's book. We have seen, you know, and for the first one, Tuesday, we did see that he eventually sneezed and things, you know, havoc is wrought. But we don't see the need to then clean up that. But obviously we've got a, you know, the circus tent is blown down and the train was, you know, thrown from its tracks. And ultimately, I think you and I maybe even discussed, like, someone's going to have to clean all that up. And so this is, it's kind of nice that the solution is just, well, can we just have him sneeze again? But there also is a fair amount of kind of some trauma involved in this for some of the things. There's two whales facing each other. And one of them notes that, like, unless, like, things are put back the way they are, the whale won't be able to go home again, which is kind of a traumatic thing. The idea that you wouldn't be able to go home again, it's the kind of thing that, you know, becomes strangely like a refugee story at some point.
Yeah, Finch really responded to that, that this is not just two whales. It's an adult whale and a child whale. And, you know, Finch saw that immediately and read into that, that, you know, there's the child whale and then this other whale is the daddy whale. And he was pretty distressed thinking about how I might not be able to get home to him from campus someday. So yeah, there was like, there definitely was trauma here in the reading in ways that there simply were not in the previous two books. And so, you know, that I think is a great observation, plus the fact that there's an actual obstacle in the story as opposed to the story simply being about suspense, right? Is Chu going to sneeze? Of course he's going to sneeze, but when is he going to sneeze, right? That's the sort of storytelling we get in the first two books. This, we actually have an obstacle. And so, you know, putting those two things together, and maybe one other thing that we'll talk about, this actually felt like, you know, game in here, I don't know, intentionally or no, was thinking about an older audience here for this story than he had been for the previous two stories.
You know, I think there definitely is an arc here, because thinking about the prior story, Chu's first day of school, you know, he talks to his parents and he encounters them at the beginning when they drop him off at school and at the end when they're asking how school was. But there, the challenge before Chu was not being sure about what it was going to be like to be at school, you know, his first day, and whether he would be accepted if he sneezed. And kind of feeling lonely and isolated until the moment when he realizes his classmates not only don't care that he sneezes, but in fact love it. Here, because he's overcome that concern about isolation, he's with his parents the whole time. And in fact, he's surrounded by the same kind of community throughout, as you mentioned, the Arctic Fox and many others who are all kind of know him and are happy to be around him. And so there's never any fear about how others may look at him here the way there was in the prior story. And I think it's because he already has kind of overcome that fear in the prior story. So now we've got the evolution of the character where the fear is not, will I be accepted? Am I alone? Because it's like, nope, you're not alone. I mean, he's with his parents. But also, you know, you're part of the community. However, there is this thing we need to figure out how to undo what you did. Although the solution comes pretty quick as to how to do that. He needs to sneeze again. How to get him to sneeze takes a little bit more time, but everyone seems to be fine on that. And no one seems like there's no one who is angry at, you know, Chu for sneezing. There's no one who's blaming him for sneezing. There's no, I mean, it's something that he does. And so there's an eagerness to put right what he's done, but no one's, you know, blaming him or, you know, pointing at him and in either anger or frustration over this, or looking to suggest that in the future he be muzzled or anything like that. So.
Well, let's talk about the last thing that's different here. You've brought this up already, Brent, which is that, there are merpandas in this book, which are, you know, merpeople, except that they're pandas, right? Because this is a world that doesn't have humans. It has anthropomorphic animals. And so there is, you know, half fish, half panda people who live in the ocean. There's a touching moment at the end of the book in which Chu shares his ice cream with a kid merpanda in the ocean. But this, again, is something that's very different from the previous two books. This is an expansion of this world, a surprising, at least for me, expansion of this world, where the fantasy element of this story, the speculative element of this story, or of Chu's world, right, is that, hey, it's a world of anthropomorphic animals, but they're all just regular animals. They're just animals that we can see, you know, today, right, out in the world somewhere, or at least at zoos or in nature documentaries and so on, that we don't have, you know, prehistoric animals, right? It's not a world with, you know, anthropomorphic dinosaurs walking around, and we don't have fantasy creatures, except we get to this book and we suddenly do. Did you like this? How did this work for you? I guess maybe is the more neutral way to ask that question.
I mean, I think having the merpandas was kind of delightful. It added even more of a fantastical element to already having the anthropomorphic creatures that we had. And I had, which I'm guessing you had this thought too, but as we were seeing some of these animals where we had seen the same animals or similar ones before, in my head, this is like the same pig who we've seen in, at least, I don't remember if there was one in Chu's first day of school, but at least like at the circus. And so that these are some of the same creatures in the community, but we haven't seen, other than a family of creatures, we haven't, it's almost been like Noah's Ark, where we're not seeing a robust range where there are many pandas in the world. And so the only way to see something that looks kind of like him is to find kind of the undersea equivalent. But it adds this whole other kind of awareness of the undersea creatures, and it lets Chu in the young merpanda girl kind of see his opposite for the undersea version of things, which, you know, otherwise he wouldn't get to see, which I think, you know, probably leads him to have the period earlier than most people do, where they think about marine biology as something they want to do, which I think is a phase that most people go through, and some people don't move past that, which is good because we need marine biologists. But it was kind of a fun extra layer of things. And I liked the particularly that once everything was back to normal, he got to see the merpanda girl again. It wasn't that he only gets to see them when things are off kilter.
Something that really struck me about the merpandas here has me thinking about C.S. Lewis again, and just, you know, peering behind the curtain, behind the scenes here. Of course, it was last month that we aired our Narnia episodes, but you and I actually recorded them in between recording our Chu episodes. So when we recorded Chu's first day at school, we hadn't done those Narnia episodes yet, even though, you know, that was last week in terms of listening to the episodes. Now we have done them. And just the image here of the merpandas reminded me of the merpeople that we get in, I guess really it's Voyage of the Dawn Treader, right? Where we get those in Narnia, just that like they're there, they're almost kind of a mirror image of the world. That's actually how this felt here. And I think even just, you know, in the way that you're describing, that this is a way that Chu is kind of seeing his own reflection in some way, even though that's not literally true, but there's a kind of metaphorical sense of that. That's the way Lewis is dealing with writing about, conceiving of the merpeople in Narnia. But the thing that really struck me here in terms terms of C.S. Lewis is that I did not like the Merpandas at all. I was bothered by this. This is breaking the world, right? The conceit of the world is anthropomorphic animals. It's not anthropomorphic fantasy creatures or, you know, fantasy creatures at all. That now this has become a world that had one concept, but now Gaiman is just throwing in other stuff for his own amusement. And I was reminded, of course, that this is exactly Tolkien's critique of Narnia, right? Is what the heck is Santa Claus doing in there? And like, why don't you have, you know, 100 pages of etymology for languages? In fact, why is everybody just speaking English? Although we actually do eventually learn why that's the case and so on, right? That Tolkien had the same kind of criticism of Narnia. And that was my knee-jerk reaction as well to the Merpandas here. And it is the case, right, that I have Tolkien tattoos and not Lewis tattoos. That came out here for me just in my reaction to this, but it's not really a grievance here, but it was just kind of a kind of quick emotional response of disliking it. But on multiple readings, of course, I was fine with it. Finch was interested in the Merpandas, and that's, I suppose, really all that matters. And I think thinking of Finch's reactions here, that's been the last segment on these. Let's just move into that and we'll close out this episode. We've talked quite a bit about Finch's reaction to this book already, but just following up here, maybe the last thing I'll say is that we have now completed the series. As soon as we read Tuesday at the Beach, Finch went to the shelf and grabbed the other two books and brought them over. We read them all. We had them all on his, you know, table, his reading table for a good week. And I will say that he, at least two-thirds of the time, just wanted to read Tuesday. That was the one that he wanted to read really over and over again. We read Chew's First Day of School a few times, but he wasn't that into this book. Tuesday at the Beach just didn't capture his imagination the way that the other two did. And, you know, I didn't ask him why that was. It's simply something that I observed. But I think, you know, last episode, you and I had talked about ourselves, I think, preferring Tuesday to Chew's First Day at School, simply because of the variety of locations and so on. And I think that that probably was a big part of Finch's response to these books as well, is simply that he preferred the one that had the more spatially expansive world.
Yeah, and I think that probably was going to continue to hold for him. I would be interested if you kind of have him read Tuesday at the Beach immediately before / immediately after having a family trip to the beach, whether he might like it a little bit more than he does now. But it still probably can't overcome the constraint of only having one location, and not having the variety then of kind of, you know, the Where's Waldification of like, look at what everyone is doing in the scene, right? The way that we do with the very different tableaus that we have in Tuesday.
Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, you and I are not beach people. That's maybe something we should have said at the top of the show. And so perhaps Finch maybe even picked up on my subconscious antipathy to the beach. If this had been Tuesday in the mountains, then perhaps he would have really loved it, because I would have been giddy with excitement about it. But not a beach person, you aren't either. Well, I think that is a perfect note on which to close out this episode. I'm Glenn McDorman.
And I'm Brent Helt. You can find us and our other creative projects at claytemplemedia.com.
Next month, we will be back with Hellblazer, Johanna Constantine. This is something I'm very, very excited about. Been wanting to cover this for quite a while. After that, we're going to have Trollbridge, and then we'll be back eventually soon, a few more months, with Sandman, A Game of You. And then after A Game of You, we will have our interval between Sandman story arcs. We will be back with another series on picture books for kids written by Neil Gaiman. So if this has been, you know, the thing that you've really come to the show for here has been these books on Chew, we will be back with something similar in about a year. Until next time, pleasant dreams.